My name is Alan Reid. I'm what's called a specialty registrar in public health medicine, and I work in the West Midlands at Solihull. I started as a registrar in 2012 because I wasn't always working in sort of public health. Previous to that, I had a clinical role as a dentist. So I was a dentist for 17 years. I was born in Glasgow, as you can probably tell from the accent. I went to school just outside Glasgow in Paisley. I'm quite a studious academic, probably nerdy child. Came from a medical family. My mother was a senior nurse. My sister, older sister, she went into nursing as well. And I was probably the clever one. And I think my mother wanted me to go and do medicine. I was thinking of doing medicine, but then I was never out the dentist because I grew up in the 1980s with a Glasgow diet of sugar. And I was never out the dentist having cavities done. And my dentist was very friendly. And I was probably looking as a role model at that time because, I don't know, I think probably a lot of teenagers, when you're gay, especially in Scotland in the 1980s, that's probably what, you know, I was looking for a role model. He seemed to fit that. He had a medical job, and I thought, oh, actually, maybe I won't do medicine, maybe I'll do dentistry instead. And that's really how I became a dentist and applied to dental school and got accepted and qualified from dental school in 1991, like way last century. I started practicing in Glasgow, and the reason I moved down to London is I met someone online. This is probably the early times of online, your gaydars and gay.coms, and I met a guy who was from Montenegro in former Yugoslavia. He moved to London in 1999, and we got chatting, and he came up to Glasgow for a year and thought, well, you know, it's better down in London, I think you'd be better off down there. And I sort of said, okay, let's do it. Carried on. I got a job in a practice in Lewisham. Everything was fine. My partner and I, the Montenegrin partner, we split up around about 2006. But we stayed friends. We kind of lost touch a little bit, but we stayed in contact, you know, occasionally, until I found out that he'd been diagnosed HIV positive. And of course, we'd been together for quite a number of years. And I thought, well, I perhaps should get myself tested. But knowing that if I got myself tested and it was a positive result, that would be the end of my career. Eventually, I decided to get tested anonymously to find out what the result would be, and it was a positive result. So I had to struggle with what to do. I initially didn't disclose to anyone except for a few close friends, but then one day I was at work, about 3-4 months after my HIV diagnosis, and I got a phone call from the Health Protection Agency, which is a government agency that deals with medical threats to health. So I got a phone call from the local office to say that the Sun newspaper had been in touch, that they'd got a story from someone that I was a dentist and knowingly practicing while HIV positive. And I left the surgery for the last time, left dentistry that day in 2008. The policy started in 1990. Obviously, HIV became an issue in the mid-80s. The recommendation from the Department of Health was that any healthcare worker was banned from healthcare. So that policy kind of remained, and then obviously they relaxed it for non-surgical performing healthcare workers when they realised there wasn't a risk. So, but for people like me, surgeons, dentists, midwives, theatre assistants, anyone who's working in a surgical field, if they were HIV positive, they just weren't allowed to work. That was the end of their career. About 3 or 4 days after I had to give up work, of course, the Sun newspaper printed their story under the usual Sun newspaper banner of AIDS dentist, you know, with the most unflattering picture that was taken off, that they took of me from a hidden camera across from the street to make me look just completely awful. And I thought, okay, you know, my world was collapsing round about me. I was in distraught, you know, I was a nervous wreck. I just remember it's the fear and anxiety that ended up having my house repossessed and basically having thrown myself in the mercy of friends for someone to stay, effectively being homeless. So going from a dentist with 17 years practice, always paying my bills, never, you know, really not wanting for anything, certainly not very rich, but comfortable, to going to nothing. It was a real wake-up call, you know, it's a really difficult time. In fact, I had some tax and some bills outstanding that I didn't have any income to pay against, so I ended up having to go bankrupt. So my HIV status, in terms of the impact on my life, was pretty devastating. A friend of mine said, look, come out to my house in Italy and just get away from it all, get away from the press. So yeah, I ended up living in Italy for just over a year, living a different, completely different kind of life. It was probably actually what I needed. It was a place where no one knew the story and I could really recover, I suppose. I came back from Italy all renewed and full of hope with a plan to what I was going to do. I went back to university and did a master's in public health. But then I found out about training as a consultant in public health and moved into public health in 2012. The post I got offered was in Birmingham. So I'd never actually lived or been to Birmingham. I'd passed through it on the train. So I thought, well, here we go, a new beginning in Birmingham. And that's how I ended up moving here. Since 2005, there was a review of changing the guidance to allow HIV-positive healthcare workers back to surgical procedures if they were on antivirals and had an undetectable viral load, which that's the whole point of taking antiviral. There's more and more evidence to show that someone who has an undetectable viral load can't transmit the HIV virus to anyone else, either sexually or through blood-to-blood, for it might happen through a surgical incident, for example. The thing that was missing up until that point is that no one had... There was anecdotal stories of dentist A, this happened to them, and they said, this was really terrible, what happened to me? There was no face to it. There was no one prepared to actually say, you know, I am Alan, and this, I'm a dentist, this happened to me. Obviously, my name was already in the Sun newspaper online with AIDS dentist. So I thought, well, I'm going to take control of this and take ownership of it. And, you know, if there's going to be press for me, it'll be on my terms. And maybe that would help to dilute the sort of negative stuff that was there. So I did a few interviews, newspaper interviews, and really it was a very positive outcome. They saw my side of it and I was able to put my story across. And, of course, having that a named person or a face and name to it gave certainly more power and influence to Medical and Dental Defence Union and the indemnity groups that were working with the government experts to get this change to occur. And I'm happy to say in 2012, 2013, that's when the first guidance came through that within the year it was going to be changed. And the guidance actually officially changed on January the 1st, 2014. Bearing in mind that it wasn't really my choice to give up dentistry, it was kind of forced on me and I had to find something else to do. I decided to see if I would perhaps want to combine a career with public health with going back to dentistry, if only to go back to dentistry to say, I can. So that's the reason why I'm looking at possibly returning to dental practice.